from deep inside your radio.
Well, they're celebrating St. Joseph's Day this weekend, so I must be in New Orleans. Do they celebrate anywhere else? You tell me. And by the way, speaking of you tell me, thank you to all the hundreds of thousands of you who explained to me in reference to my offhand question last week that HSBC stands for Hong Kong Shanghai Banking Corporation, even though some of you didn't know that it's now headquartered in London. But the crowd mind knew. This is New Orleans, as I say. Congratulations to New York City, where Mayor Bloomberg announced this week that the homeless population has shot up. Not really the best use of terminology there. Has risen more than 33% in the past year. So I think New York, that's good. But if you want to be home of the homeless, Santa Monica is going to still say, not good enough. We'll see. In the realm of municipal boosterism, however, I have to say New York and L.A. are basically neck and neck at this point. You know, they could, at this point, put up street banners in New York that say homeless capital of the world, because they have fashion capital of the world, financial capital of the world. The one that puzzled me, seriously, they have those up, as New Yorkers know. The one that puzzles me, however, is the others you can make an argument for. The one that puzzles me, as I say, is the banner that reads real estate capital of the world. What does that mean? What could it we have the most expensive real estate? Certainly don't have the most real estate. It's a little island. But real estate capital of the world, more real estate brokers, more real estate ads? New Yorkers, help me out here. On the other hand, L.A., now, I have to say it's a pleasure to be in a city where the buildings still look like buildings, because in Los Angeles, they've decided, well, let me put it this way. Today is the day of the Los Angeles Marathon. Good day to not be trying to drive around the city. And as an interesting experiment, this year the route, I think they change the route every year. This year the route has been designed so that you see every office building that has a huge vinyl ad draped on it. So it's going to be about a 55-mile marathon, because every office building in L.A. has a giant vinyl ad draped on it at the moment, because the office buildings weren't pretty enough. So, the L.A. slogan, and you're only aware of it really when you fly into the city. I don't think I've seen it anywhere else. Not that it's necessary to see it anywhere else, but if you fly into the L.A. airport, the airport, which I used to brag on because it was ad-free, ladies and gentlemen. Imagine that. For years, the L.A. airport was ad-free, and they finally woke up and started festooning the place with just too late for Tiger Woods, but, you know, with all the other ads. And the vast majority of the ads in L.A. airport right now are for L.A. And the slogan for Los Angeles is, "That's so L.A." Somebody was watching Raven and decided, you know, that's so Raven, that's so... So, for example, they have a picture of Kobe Bryant, and the ad says, "Living your dream, that's so L.A." Now, the rejected version was "living your dream and folding it over the back of a chair, that's so L.A." But anyway, that's annals of civic boosterism. Ladies and gentlemen, just ask yourself, what year is it? Might as well ask, what century is it? Universal Records announced this week they're experimenting with lowering prices on new CDs. This must be, I don't know, 1992 or something. Experimenting with the idea of lowering prices on CDs. That will fix it, I'll tell you guys. And I would be sending my thoughts directly to the head of Universal, saying what a good idea I think that is, except I can't figure out whether he has a Prodigy or a CompuServe account. Good. Now, if only they could put some record stores out there, that would solve everything. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, a few words about AFPAC. the Afghan government was holding secret talks with the Taliban's number two when he was captured in Pakistan. This story just folds in on itself. It's going to be very hard for anybody at this remove to figure out what's really going on. But the vaunted Pakistani arrest of the number two Taliban chief seems to be interpreted many different ways. And this interpretation is that Karzai was angry. The arrest infuriated President Karzai. According to one of Karzai's advisors, the detention of Mullah Abdul Ghani Baradar, second in the Taliban only to the one-eyed Mullah Omar, has raised new questions about whether the U.S. is willing to back peace discussions with leaders who harbored the terrorists behind 9/11. Karzai was very angry when he heard the Pakistanis had picked up Baradar with an assistance from U.S. intelligence, the advisor said. Besides the ongoing talks, he said Baradar had, quote, given a green light, unquote, to participating in a three-day peace jirga that Karzai is hosting next month. That's my favorite jirga of the year. The advisor, who had knowledge of the peace talks, spoke on condition of anonymity. Other Afghan officials, including the security advisor to the governor of Helmand Province, also confirmed talks between Baradar and the Afghan government. Several media reports have suggested that Baradar had been in touch with Karzai representatives, but these are the first details to emerge. Baradar's arrest has already prompted Pakistan and others to stake out their positions on possible reconciliation negotiations that could mean an end to the 8-year war. 8 years, that's not long enough. Come on, go for 100. Officials have disclosed little about how Baradar was nabbed last month in the port city of Karachi. The Pakistanis were said to be upset that the Americans were the source of news reports about the arrest. Everybody's upset. I'm going to get upset. Herbie's upset. Far from expressing gratitude, members of Karzai's administration were quick to accuse Pakistan of picking up Baradar either to sabotage or gain control of talks with the Taliban leaders. Okay. You know that Pakistan wants to be at the table. Hell, they want to own the table when those talks start because they regard Afghanistan as their back door. Oops. And this is the battle against the war. The effort to win over Afghans and former Taliban turf in Marja has put American and NATO commanders in the unusual position of arguing against opium eradication, pitting them against some Afghan officials who are pushing to destroy the harvest. General Stanley McChrystal on down, the military's position is clear. U.S. forces no longer eradicate, as one NATO official puts it to the New York Times. Marja is a special case right now, says Commander Jeffrey Eggers, a member of the General Strategic Advisory Group. We don't trample the livelihood of those we're trying to win over. What happens when you've won them over? Trample, trample, trample. Or? So, junkies, deal with Marja, not Marjo. Afghan officials are divided. Some support the American position. Others want to plow the fields under before the harvest, which has already begun. And because the war on drugs isn't kooky enough, ladies and gentlemen. Deadline Mexico City. The British government has notified Mexico that a handheld device widely used by the Mexican military and police to search for drugs and explosives may be ineffective. Mexico's National Defense Secretariat has spent more than $10 million to purchase hundreds of the detectors, similar to the magic wands, the bomb detectors we talked about on this program earlier, in use in Afghanistan and Iraq. Critics have called them nothing more than divining rods. Mexican defense officials praise the devices as a critical part of their efforts to combat drug traffickers. It's manufactured by a British company, Global Technical, widely used nationwide at checkpoints to search for contraband. The Army has purchased 521 of them. The British government, which is considering legislation to stop exports of the device, notified Mexico and other countries around the world last month that it may not work. This followed reports that the bomb detector made by another British company was considered ineffective. Who says they don't build anything in Great Britain? Yeah, the British car industry may be dead, but the British fake detector industry is going strong. Hello, welcome to the show. That's so UK. from the edge of Lake Pontchartrain. In New Orleans, Louisiana, ladies and gentlemen, happy St. Joseph's weekend to you. Where's your Alta? Where's your Alta? And welcome to this edition of the show. I'm Harry Shearer, and now... it's time for me to read the trades for you. For those of you... sound weird here. For those of you who may be new to the broadcast, it's a recurring feature in which I maintain that the real news comes not from the conventional public news media, but from the trade magazines of various industries. Today, from the Journal of Light Construction.
Yeah?
They have one. Haiti says, thanks but no thanks to formaldehyde trailers. I'll read it for you. A proposal to send formaldehyde-tainted Katrina trailers to Haiti to house earthquake survivors is receiving a cool reception from the Haitian government. Lobbyists for the RV industry and some members of Congress have welcomed the proposal, which would divert a flood of low-priced trailers away from a U.S. market already battered by the recession. But critics said that while auction buyers receive legal advice of the risks of formaldehyde and must acknowledge the trailers are only for non-occupancy, Haitians wouldn't receive this warning. Just because you're poor and have no place to live doesn't mean you want to live in a formaldehyde trailer, protested Representative Donna Edwards of Maryland during a recent hearing. Officials with FEMA and the U.S. Agency for International Development, which is coordinating relief efforts for Haiti, said they haven't even discussed the plan. Haitian Culture and Communications Minister Marie-Laurence Jocelyn Lesègue was quoted as saying, "I don't think we would use them. I don't think we would accept them." So that old saying is wrong, ladies and gentlemen. They can be choosers. And from Advertising Age, the inside story of product placement in a music video. The most talked about aspect of Lady Gaga's music video for Telephone, co-starring Beyoncé, was not the singer's flagrant partial nudity, girl-on-girl kissing, or mass murder sequence in a diner. It was the product placement. At least 9 different brands make appearances in the 9-minute music video, from Lady Gaga's own Heartbeats headphones to a Beats limited edition laptop from HP to telephone partner Virgin Mobile, and from Miracle Whip and Wonder Bread to Diet Coke. Almost instantly, the video lighted up the web with reactions, which gave a helpful rundown of all the brands, including fashion and accessories, that make appearances. Despite the cornucopia of products, only a handful were paid placements, said Lady Gaga's manager, Troy Carter, of Coalition Media Group. They sound nice. Carter told Ad Age that several of the brands were Gaga's ideas and did not pay to be included. A scene in which Gaga curls her hair with Diet Coke cans was an homage to her mother, who used the exact same grooming technique in the 70s. Another sequence in which Gaga poisons a whole diner full of patrons is interspersed with footage of the singer making sandwiches with Wonder Bread and Miracle Whip. Carter said Gaga wanted to juxtapose the poison sequence with all-American brands and suggested Wonder Bread for an unpaid placement. Miracle Whip did make a paid appearance. A Miracle Whip spokeswoman confirmed the brand's paid integration, but didn't comment further. The product shots feature new Miracle Whip packaging and seem the latest in a series of Generation Y outreach maneuvers, including a new campaign from Miracle Whip promising, quote, "We will not tone it down." Miracle Whip is on the edge. Miracle Whip is off the hook. Featured throughout telephone are shots of a Virgin Mobile cell phone, a nod given to the mobile sponsor of Gaga's tour, as well as a Polaroid camera and photo booth as part of Gaga's new role as the camera company's creative director. She's going to save Polaroid. Several characters are seen listening to music on Heartbeats by Gaga headphones from Interscope Music and surfing the internet on the Beats laptop from Hewlett-Packard, all of which are extensions of Gaga's marketing partnerships. Plentyoffish.com, an online dating site, also makes a surprise appearance, the result of ongoing talks with Gaga's marketing team to find the right project. "We have a lot of fun with it now," Carter said of the telephone video's product placement. "If Michael Jackson was making Thriller, he would do this too. These million-dollar music videos have to have partners to be produced." Diana Cass, who heads up pop music marketing at Universal Music Group, hey, that's the same company that's experimenting with lowering, yes, said, quote, "We were trying to line up brands that were organic. There were natural pieces in there, like being in a kitchen, so those kind of scenes that just made sense for brands. But we always agree creatively and get sign-off before we walk down the aisle," unquote. Where entertainment is going. The sense you get when I read the trades for you. Copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Miracle Whip is so off the hook. And now, ladies and gentlemen, it's clean, it's safe, it's cheap. It's too clean to meter. It's too safe to be cheap. News of our nuclear world. Savannah River National Laboratory took the unusual step of declaring a 3-week timeout last month for workers and facilities that handle radioactive materials, all because of an upswing in contamination incidents. That sounds safe. It wasn't so much the severity, but more the frequency, said Deputy Lab Director Paul Deason, who halted work in some areas to reevaluate the monitoring rules under which individual labs are governed. The decision was entirely voluntary, he said, and came on the heels of 7 contamination episodes from September to February, a total well above the average. Why, that's 1 a month. Contamination is measured in disintegrations per minute. Hello? Does that sound good? With reportable incidents defined by the Energy Department as 5,000 DPM or more. The average year includes 2 reportable and 4 non-reportable incidents. We had 3 or 4 non-reportables in a 2-month time frame and then 2 reportables back-to-back in December and January, said Deason. One reportable incident was found to have been caused by inadequate monitoring by a technician working with plutonium. Another incident involved a chair in a break room where measurements of 20,000 DPM and 280,000 DPM were detected. The material in that chair turned out to have been there for many years. Oh, okay then, and was not caused by any recent activity or oversight. As part of the investigation conducted during the timeout, specific areas were also re-examined in terms of the monitoring rules they use. The National Laboratory has about 200 individual labs. 50 of them handle radioactive materials. Of those 50, 9 were given new designations that will require greater precautions in monitoring, says Mike Swain, the lab's operations manager. The timeout lasted 3 weeks. That sounds good. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to go falsetto on you. That sounds good. Following up on a story you heard about here last week, the Indian government has now withdrawn a bill that seeks to limit the liabilities of companies setting up nuclear power plants in India. The bill would have capped to about $65 million the compensation that foreign nuclear operators would be liable for in the event of a nuclear accident. Like, that's going to happen. The Indian government's liability, however, would be limited to about $385 million. The government maintained that without the legislation, foreign companies would be reluctant to invest in India, but opposition parties said the bill was being pushed through because of U.S. pressure, that it does not protect Indian citizens in case of a nuclear disaster. Like, that's going to happen. And that most of the burden for any cleanup falls on Indian taxpayers. Anyway, the bill has been withdrawn for now. And on the subject of nuclear waste, because that's been solved, hasn't it? Germany's plan to develop a site to store its most dangerous radioactive waste may require 25 more years before a decision can be made. That's according to Germany's environment minister. An initial phase of the plan will look into safety issues at Gorleben, a proposed repository for, well, it's their yucca, for high-level radioactive waste, as well as the necessary approvals required. Germany, like the U.S., has struggled to find out how to dispose of cancer-causing wastes. That's the description from Business Week. From its 17 nuclear power plants, the country said it may extend operation of some of its newest nuclear plants to produce yet more waste. More waste. More waste. We've been producing nuclear waste for years, for decades, and we simply can't use excuses about what's the best alternative to avoid taking responsibility, says the environment minister. Germany has spent more than $1.3 billion since the 1980s to determine whether the Gorleben site is appropriate to store waste. $1.3 billion to figure out whether it's appropriate. A previous government placed a 10-year moratorium on further research at that site. That expires this year. I can't wait. More waste. Ladies and gentlemen, Toyota is learning that it's not fun to be number one. Toyota, of course, is the number one car maker in the world now. Everybody's gunning for them. And they're gunning for themselves, apparently. The story in the Washington Post this week outlined how they... the boast Toyota's lobbyists made about derailing regulation seemed to have been accurate. And, of course, you know, they're not the only ones slowing down. And sometimes it's the regulators themselves. How about this? Right here. Hey, look at this. As banks gambled on the risky mortgages that helped create the worst financial crisis in generations, the U.S. government handed out millions of dollars in bonuses to regulators of agencies that missed or ignored warning signs that the system was on the verge of meltdown. The bonuses, released to the Associated Press, are the latest evidence of the government's false sense of security during the boom. The bonuses, information about them was released in response to a Freedom of Information Act request, were part of a reward program little known outside the government. Some government regulators got tens of thousands of dollars in perks, boosting their salaries by almost a quarter. Others, well, they got a few hundred dollars for employees who came up with good ideas. During the boom, the three agencies that supervise most U.S. banks, the FDIC, the Office of Thrift Supervision, and the Office of Comptroller of the Currency, gave out at least $19 million in bonuses. Nearly all that money was spent recognizing superior performance. Largest share, more than $8.4 million, went to financial examiners, those employees and managers who scrutinize internal bank documents and sound the first alarms. After the meltdown, the government's internal investigators surveyed the wreckage and repeatedly found that those regulators had not done enough. All right. But anyway, Toyota is on the hook for all these. I'm driving one right now, and I tell you, I never felt safer. I have to keep repeating that to myself. But and at the same week that Toyota's having all these troubles because they're number one, GM's new chief executive, I think this is the third one in a year, announced that the company, which has closed the Pontiac division, closed Hummer, sold off Saab, may be reaching a profit. So after, as I say, closing off Pontiac, which made the iconic GTO, GM may be learning It's good to be little.
When you used to rule the streets and the track like a fuel-burning giant, you fought hard so your engines wouldn't be pollution compliant. You and your brother cars prospered by being defiant. And you had such big fun till Obama took the company away.
Summer.
You're closing down Pontiac, looking hard to dump your Hummer. Bankruptcy buys, being owned by the fans is a bummer.
But you had such big fun till Obama took the company away. Little GM, you used to be so big. Caddy Chevy, Buick for Pop. Little Pierre, rolling to a stop. Wheeling, dealing, though it dress low. Wheeling, dealing, your gaskets are blown. Wheeling, dealing, we still gotta drive. Where we gonna work if you don't survive? When you're shutting down dealers, cleaning it out like a Swiffer.
Cleaning it out, yeah,
cleaning it out. Going 62-0, maybe your mileage will differ.
Cleaning it out, yeah,
cleaning it out. In a hot rodder, going out a blue sniffer. But you had such big fun till Obama took the company away.
Little GM.
You were never the best, you were never the worst. All that's left is a big fire sale. Little GM, you were too big not to fail.
Give me a ticket for an aeroplane. Ain't got time to take a fast train. Lonely days are gone, I'm a-going home. My baby just wrote me a letter. I don't care how much money I gotta spend. Got to get back to my baby again. Lonely days are gone, I'm a-going home. My baby just wrote me a letter. When she wrote me a letter, said she couldn't live without me. Listen, mister, can't you see I got to get back to my baby once more? Anyway, yeah, give me a ticket for an aeroplane. Ain't got time to take a fast train. Lonely days are gone, I'm a-going home. My baby just wrote me a letter. When she wrote me a letter, said she couldn't live without me no more. Listen, mister, can't you see I got to get back to my baby once more? Anyway, yeah, give me a ticket for an aeroplane. Ain't got time to take a fast train. Lonely days are gone, I'm a-going home. My baby just wrote me a letter. My baby just wrote me a letter.
This is Le Show, and now, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
First of all, there was a little technical thing last week that prevented me from sharing this with you. And it's a week along now, but I still wanted to share it because I think this represents the first recorded example in my study of public apologies over the past few years of two consecutive apologies in the same appearance by two people in the same place. It's former Congressman Eric Massa and Glenn Beck last week on Glenn Beck's television show. Consecutive apologies coming at you right now. Hello. Right now, in a moment. Like right now.
I owe him an apology. I do. Because on my radio show, I went over the top. I said he'd tie his kids to the railroad to get a vote. He wouldn't do that. He'd tie my kids to the railroad to get a vote, but maybe not his. And so in hyperbole, I was guilty. I went over the top. Enough said on that.
America, I'm going to shoot straight with you. I think I've wasted your time. I think this is the first time I have wasted an hour of your time, and I apologize for that.
Okay, two in a row. That's like top 40 hits. Two in a row without commercial interruption. More apologies for you from this week when Joseph Scott Dean heard he was being sought in a highly publicized Jacksonville Beach, Florida rape case. He assumed a friend was playing a joke on him, but the Jacksonville resident wasn't laughing when five people called him Tuesday afternoon telling him they'd seen his picture on the news. Police said I was a transient, but I'd never been, he said. I own a business and two houses. Jacksonville Beach Police Chief Bruce Thomason said the department mishandled the case by distributing the photo taken from Dean's driver's license. I'm not going to put it any other way, Thomason said. I don't think we did a very good job with this. The police chief called Dean this week and apologized. A senior Kraft Foods executive said he is terribly sorry by the firm's earlier pledge to keep open the Keynsham, England plant of Cadbury, which Kraft just bought, and then closed the plant. Mark Firestone said the pledge was made in good faith, as Kraft expected output to be high enough to sustain the plant. The factory is now being shut down. He added he expected no further closures or job losses in Cadbury's UK manufacturing for at least 2 years. Members of Parliament expressed incredulity over Firestone's assertion that Kraft felt it could keep the plant open. One said Kraft must have known it was not possible to keep the plant open. Who knows what Kraft knew? You know? It's an unknowable. When one knows what one doesn't know, one is being truly in the Rumsfeldian universe, does not one. Dateline Beijing, Hewlett-Packard has apologized to Chinese consumers for faulty laptops and offered extended warranties and compensation for those affected for any inconvenience due to product or service problems. Hewlett-Packard earnestly apologizes to customers, it said. Facing allegations of infidelity, Jesse James. I know, a surprise to me too. Turns out to be Sandra Bullock's husband. Who knew? Issued an apology this week to his wife and his three children, taking full responsibility for their heartbreak. In a statement provided to People magazine, he says the vast majority of the allegations reported are untrue and unfounded. There is only one person to blame for this whole situation, and that is me. This has caused my wife and my kids pain and embarrassment beyond comprehension, and I'm extremely saddened to have brought this on myself and them. I'm truly very sorry for the grief I have caused them. That's what happens when you name a guy after a bank robber, isn't it? Is it? Really? Oh, Dateline Rome. Pope Benedict XVI has released a letter apologizing for years of physical and sexual abuse suffered by Irish children at the hands of priests. The hands. Interesting verbiage. CBC.ca. The seven-page letter published in Rome has various sections addressed to the victims, their parents, the abusers, church leaders, and the Irish faithful as a whole. The letter is to be read at Sunday Mass, rebukes church leaders for grave errors of judgment by failing to respond adequately to allegations of abuse. Your trust has been betrayed and your dignity has been violated, the Pope told victims. I am truly sorry. I know that nothing can undo the wrong you have endured. The Pope said he felt shame and remorse over what the victims have endured and praised their courage. You have suffered grievously, he said, and I am truly sorry. He called the abuse carried out by priests sinful and criminal. He said those responsible must answer for their acts before God and before properly constituted tribunals, and it's a shame about the statute of limitations. No, he didn't say that. I'm saying that. And it is. It is a shame. And then, Dayline Nashville, Tennessee, Davidson County Clerk John Areola has apologized for the presence of slot machines in his office on St. Patrick's Day and for one of his top aides inappropriately pushing a news reporter. Areola said he was not proud of what happened on St. Patrick's Day. Even though I did not know this was happening and even though everything was technically legal and ethical, it should not have happened and I take full responsibility, the county clerk said in a statement. He said he suspended the deputy clerk, Joey Workman, without pay for inappropriately pushing a news reporter out of a break room, and suspended clerk Kelly Farmer, who brought the slot machines to work. He also apologized to the reporter and directed Joey Workman to apologize as well. Slot machines in the county clerk's office. A reporter came to find out that cash prizes were being offered to people who played the slot machines, Areola refused to answer any questions about the payment of cash prizes or the source of the money. Quote, he said, quote, why are you so uptight about St. Patrick's Day? Unquote. And why do you hate freedom? Tony Kornheiser's on the air rant about bicyclists, suggesting that drivers run them over, then saying they should just tap passing cyclists, drew national attention when cycling icon Lance Armstrong reacted to it, calling Kornheiser an idiot. He's a ESPN radio yacker, is Kornheiser. Armstrong appeared on his radio show, and Kornheiser apologized for his intemperate comments. A Czech doctors' organization apologized to Jewish doctors this week for the persecution they endured in pre-World War II Czechoslovakia. In October 1938, before the Nazis invaded, organizations of Czech doctors, lawyers, and others issued a memorandum urging the government, quote, to take energetic measures, unquote, to prevent Jews from practicing. We apologize for what our predecessors did to you, the statement said. Many Jewish doctors lost their jobs when the government banned them from working in state institutions. The Czech Bar Association issued a similar apology a year ago. So lawyers are faster than doctors. But wait, there's more. The earthquake in Haiti not only smashed markets, collapsed warehouses, and left more than 2.5 million people without enough to eat, it may also have shaken up the way the developing world gets food. Decades of inexpensive imports, especially rice from the U.S., punctuated with abundant aid in various crises, have destroyed local agriculture and left impoverished countries such as Haiti unable to feed themselves. U.S. President Bill Clinton, now U.N. Special Envoy to Haiti, publicly apologized this month for championing policies that destroyed Haiti's rice production. In the mid-1990s, Clinton encouraged the impoverished country to drastically cut tariffs on imported U.S. rice.
It may have been good for some of my farmers in Arkansas, but it has not worked. It was a mistake. I had to live every day with the consequences of the loss of capacity to produce a rice crop in Haiti to feed those people because of what I did, nobody else.
Unquote. The German celebrity gossip magazine Neon admitted this week it had published 5 made-up interviews since 2004 with stars such as Beyoncé, Christina Aguilera, and Snoop Doggy Dogg. In a message published on its internet site, Neon said it apologized to its readers and the artists concerned for the fictitious articles and stressed it had fired the journalist responsible. Dayline Albuquerque, a Bernalillo County Commissioner, has apologized for forwarding a racially insensitive joke by email to other government employees. That doesn't happen a lot these days. A Santa Monica sushi restaurant facing federal charges for serving endangered whale meat is set to close its doors, according to a statement posted to the Humps website, which called the decision a self-imposed punishment. The Hump hopes that by closing its doors will help bring awareness to the detrimental effect that illegal whaling has on the preservation of our ocean ecosystems and species. Federal prosecutors last week charged the owner and chef of the restaurant at Santa Monica Airport with the illegal sale of whale meat. The restaurant immediately took responsibility once it was charged. The charges came only after an undercover sting operation using tiny video cameras. In its online posting, the Hump also apologized to the public for, quote, our illegal actions. The Hump. Mayor Bloomberg of New York apologized this week to the elderly couple in Brooklyn that the NYPD mistakenly visited more than 50 times in search of criminals. I apologize to the people. I'm sorry they were bothered. He said on his weekly radio show, "It's a shame that it happened." The Daily News reported that the home of Walter and Rose Martin was repeatedly visited by detectives because of a computer glitch tied to their address. Virgin America CEO apologized this week to passengers who endured a grueling trip from Los Angeles to New York this past weekend. It was, of course, scheduled for about 5 hours, but took more than 16. Time Warner Cable officials apologized this week after they mistakenly showed Playboy preview programming on two children's channels. Time Warner spokesman Keith Poston said, "Basically, we had a piece of equipment fail. What happened is some previews for the Playboy channel actually got it diverted into the preview box on our Kids on Demand and our Preschool on Demand." The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen. A copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Hello, America. I'm Glenn Beck. You know, I'm just like you. I mean, yes, I'm a multimillionaire recovering alcoholic celebrity, but like you, I used to read lots of books. And afterward, I'd realize something. For maybe 10 hours of reading, I'd end up with 5 minutes worth of useful information. Not so smart, huh? That was my problem until one day I met a brilliant inventor businessman, Strom Philpott, who introduced me to the greatest advance in reading comprehension since... I don't really know another advance in reading comprehension like this. I guess that's because I'm stupid. Or maybe it's because this one is the magic blackboard. Sure, you've seen it on my show, because ever since I discovered it, I can't live or speak without it. Now, I'm no scientist, but neither is Strom Philpott. Here's how the Magic Blackboard works. It uses sophisticated text precognition software to boil down any piece of writing to its simple, gut-grabbing essence. So, before you go to bed at night, you attach the patent-pending scanning device to the spine of the book you wanted to read. Don't worry, the more complicated the book, the more magic the Magic Blackboard has. The scanner connects with a standard USB cable into your Magic Blackboard. You call it a night. When you wake up next morning, the entire thrust of the book has been boiled down to easy-to-understand lines and shapes with a few keywords to get you going. And presto, you're a regular Dr. Gene Scott. Now, let me be entirely honest with you. If this technology was displayed on sophisticated digital screens, it would probably cost thousands of dollars. But because it uses a silly, old, low-tech blackboard, I promise you it'll set you back less than an autographed copy of my latest book. That's right. The blackboard you see me use every night on TV can now be yours. Now, I'm not saying it'll make you a multimillionaire TV celebrity. But then again, hey, I did used to be just like you. Come on, America. Follow me to the rest of the pitch. The Glenn Beck Magic Blackboard can be yours for just three payments of $19.99 for the first payment and $39.99 for the next two payments, except for the third. Specify Blackboard or Greenboard when you order. But hurry. This special TV offer can't last forever. When this shipment of Glenn Beck Magic Blackboards is exhausted, there won't be any more till the next shipment. So order now. Call the number on your screen. Or if you've got no screen, call the number on your radio. But call now. Goodbye, America. I'm going to go stare at my Magic Blackboard. I really hope I see you there. And now, ladies and gentlemen, news from outside the bubble. From the Times of London, here's another angle on this whole story about talking with the Taliban. A bitter argument over secret talks with the Taliban broke out when a former UN official said claims that the arrest of militants by Pakistan had wrecked progress toward peace were nonsense. Peter Galbraith told the Times that Kai Aidi, who claims to have negotiated with senior Taliban officials as the UN special representative to Afghanistan, quote, greatly exaggerated the negotiations that he says he was considering. Aidi had said in a BBC interview that Pakistan's arrest of Mullah Baradar shut down talks that had been going on with his involvement for almost a year. Galbraith had a public falling out with Aidi last year, said of his former colleague, he's had very irregular meetings with people who were once associated with the Taliban, but he's not been in any negotiations with the Quetta Shura. He simply exaggerated his role. Oh, playing the Quetta Shura card. Fresh evidence, this is from the Independent of London, fresh evidence has emerged that British military intelligence ran a secret torture operation in Iraq which authorized degrading and unlawful treatment of prisoners. Documents reveal that prisoners were kept hooded for long periods in intense heat and deprived of sleep. They also reveal that directors running the operation claimed to be answerable only to the highest officials. The revelations will further embarrass the British government, which last month was forced to release information showing it knew that UK resident and terrorist suspect Binyam Mohammed had been tortured in Pakistan. The latest documents emerged during the inquiry into Baba Musa, an Iraqi worker beaten to death while in the custody of British troops in 2003. The inquiry is looking into how interrogation techniques banned by the government in 1972 and considered torture and degrading treatment were used again in Iraq. By the way, sounds like what those bad apples did. And from the Independent, up to 20 million people in Bangladesh are at risk of suffering early deaths because of arsenic poisoning, the legacy of a well-intentioned but ill-planned water project that created a devastating public health catastrophe. 4 decades after an internationally funded move to dig wells across the country massively backfired, huge numbers of people remain at higher risk of contracting cancer and heart disease. The intellectual development of untold numbers of children is also being held back by the contamination of drinking water. Bangladesh's arsenic crisis dates back to the 1970s when, in an effort to improve the quality of drinking water and counter diarrhea, there was a large-scale international investment in building wells. It was believed the wells would provide safe supplies, yet the move, spearheaded by the UN and the World Bank, was fatally flawed. The wells were not tested for arsenic, which occurs naturally in the Ganges and Brahmaputra deltas. Check your delta, ladies and gentlemen. News from outside the bubble, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Oh, there's some music coming. And that's going to conclude this week's edition of the show. I got to go check my Delta. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations, over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, 7.415 megahertz shortwave, on the mighty 104 in Berlin, around the world through the internet. The two different locations, live and archive, whenever you want it. HarryShearer.com and KCRW.com. Available on your smartphone phone through Stitcher.com. Available free as a download to subscribers at Audible.com/LeShow. And available as a free podcast, sans the musical segments, at KCRW.com. And it would be just like seeing those office buildings in L.A. naked again, if you'd agree to join with me then. Would you? Alrighty. Thank you very much. A tip of the LeShow chapeau to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, Chicago in exile, and Hawaii desks. Thanks, as always, to Pam Halstead, and thanks to Jenny Lawson here at WWNO. The show is on Twitter at LeTwits. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world, no matter what New York says, as the home of the homeless.